We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you here with us. And we're also happy to have here with us in the studio, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Monthly, she is here on the program on a Tuesday, generally the second Tuesday of the month. And we talk about things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers. We talk about house plants. At this time of the year, maybe we're done doing things outside for a while, but there may be people who are listening that still there's some sort of unresolved problem, something from last growing season. There's still some, yeah, they have some issues, some unresolved issues, and maybe they have questions about that. Or I'm sure that there are also people who are already looking ahead to next spring and summer, and maybe they're thinking about things that they might like to plant. So houseplant questions, we can do that too. So any and all of that is certainly welcome. Just call us. You can talk with Sandy. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you may also send us emails, will-talk@illinois.edu. That's the address. Thank you very much.
Sure.
For being here. We have joked in the past about how you said once you had talked to somebody who had some bulbs that he hadn't yet planted, and he had a big auger bit that he put on his drill, and he just drilled into the ground. And that's a little extreme, but even I think we may even be past the point of drilling into the ground for planting bulbs, at least with now, because a lot of people have a little snow cover, so they're forced to sit inside and look at gardening books and gardening catalogs and think about what they're going to be doing. I don't think that we have anything more to be done outside right at this point.
Well, not today.
Not today. Okay. Oh, okay.
Maybe in a few days.
So if we get a little thaw.
There's always that possibility.
Yeah, there's always, be puttering out there.
Yes. You get cabin fever.
Well,
you got to.
Is there anything in particular that you might like to mention in terms of things that might be going on over the next few weeks?
Yeah. Well, I think the one thing that's great about the when we get into the winter season, there starts to be lots of conferences and things that people can go to and find out more information. We see a lot of professional conferences this time of year, and probably a couple of them that are coming up that are really big is certainly the one that has a long title these days, Illinois Specialty Crops, Agritourism, and Organic Conference. So Specialty Crops, Agritourism, Organics on January 5th through the 7th, and that's in Springfield at the Crown Plaza. January 5th through the 7th. And it really is a great opportunity, I think, for people that are maybe just sort of looking into some of these things. Maybe they think they want to be, actually start to sell some of their produce or whatever. Or maybe they're looking into going organic or whatever. I think it's really a great opportunity because they get a lot of different people together. They always have great educational conferences as well as vendors. So you can start talking to people, if you're interested. And so I think it's just a good opportunity. And you can see with a title like Specialty Crops, Agritourism, Organic, pretty much everything is in there, from herbs to you name it. Yeah. So I think that's a great opportunity. So it's January 5th through the 7th at the Crown Plaza in Springfield. And people can, I'm looking for the website here, but people can certainly call me, or if they just go Illinois Specialty Crops Conference, it will pop up more than likely, because of course I can't find it right this very second. The other thing that certainly is going on, and actually it is, the website is just www.speciallygrowers.org/conference.
Okay.
Or CON, sorry. CONFAGENDA. Conference agenda. So conf agenda. Now that I've completely confused people. But anyway, it's a great opportunity. And also for the Mid-Am Horticulture Trade Shows at Navy Pier in Chicago. That happens every year. And that's from January 19th through the 21st. And that's a much easier website. It's www.midam.org. And you can go to the Mid-Am Horticulture Trade Show. It's really more in the line of the one I just talked about is more in the way of sort of agronomic type of horticulture. Whereas this, the Mid-Am Hort Trade Show, is more in the ornamental kind of time end of things. So landscapers, anybody that has any interest in the ornamental fields in horticulture, the Mid-Am is really the place to go. So that's Navy Pier on the January 19th through the 21st. So that's a really good one. Another one in February is February 22nd through the 23rd. This is another really well-known one, the Gateway Green Industry Conference, and that's in Collinsville. And people can check that out as well. And they always have really good speakers, a couple of great speakers. Michael Durr, and these are like gurus of horticulture. Michael Durr and Alan Armitage are going to be at that. So that's a pretty big deal.
Okay. And if for people who might have been, we've talked about this before, might be thinking that they would like to go through the Master Gardener training. Right. Is that already underway now, the current session of that?
Yeah, the Master Gardener program, I think for most of us, certainly here in Champaign County, for most of us, we're pretty well into the process now. People have gone through their interviews and stuff. They can always check with their local extension office because everybody has a different deadline. Most of the classes will start mid-January to the end of January. So, you know, there might be a little bit of time, but just it's always worth it. Just check with your local extension office and see if there's still openings for their Master Gardener program. So that's also a great thing to be involved in.
Okay. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's something. We got a release on this. The ACES has announced their perennial plant of the year for 2011. So they're way ahead for next year. This is the Arkansas Blue Star, which is also known as Amsonia hubrictii.
Very good. I'm impressed, David.
Thank you very much.
You can pronounce that.
Thank you.
That.
Well, they did include thoughtfully included a pronouncer.
Oh, now you're cheating. Now, if you hadn't told me that, I would have been impressed.
I might have been able to get close. I don't know. Anyway, tell us about Amsonia.
You know, it really is a great plant. It's native. We actually have a beautiful one on at the Idea Garden for local folks that are near Urbana on the southwest corner, and had it for a number of years. They're perennials, obviously. They get to about, maybe 2.5 feet tall or so, maybe a little bit taller than that. Very fine texture. It's almost, the leaves are, they're just very almost willow-like. So I think just the texture of the garden is great. They do have little blue flowers, but I will tell you, I think the foliage is just as beautiful as the flowers are. So you certainly have the flowers, but it has a great fall color, which we don't often see that in perennials. They often just sort of fade away. This one has a very intense yellow fall color. So it's really, I would say it's a tough plant, hot, dry, doesn't seem to mind. It is a full sun for the most part plant. Mm-hmm. That would be the one maybe caveat to the whole thing. But it really is a tough plant. And I could see people using it as one of their sort of rock hard plants to put in their perennial garden. You know it's going to do well every year. You know it's going to survive the winter and all those things. So it's really one. It's a plant you don't have to worry about all the time.
Well, that sounds nice because one of the things that you try to do, I guess, is in your laying out your gardens, you like to have variations in texture of the plant. And, you know, that I'm not sure that that's always that easy, really, if you're trying to get a mix of different kinds of things.
Well, I think especially in a full sun garden. Now, in the shadier gardens, we have ferns and all kinds of things that have that kind of really soft, very delicate sort of texture to them. We don't have a whole lot of perennials for the sun area that have that really soft kind of look to them. It really is a plant where you just want to touch it. It just looks so soft and, you know, it's one of those things, touchable types of plants. Yeah. So, and we don't have a whole lot of those. So.
And it does. I looked at some pictures of it, and it does have this fairly spectacular yellow gold thing that
very
it doesn't
pretty.
Fall. So that's also really nice. If you're, it's great that it will give you some different sorts of looks at different times.
Right, right. And it's such an intense yellow that you'll see it even from a distance. So it's one of those that's really about that time of the year where we really need a little color, a little vibrancy. It's a great plant for that. So that Blue Star. And there is a different Blue Star besides this one, but this one, the Arkansas Blue Star, is really a nice one.
Okay, so people can check that out. If
sure.
you have web access, at least you can just put that in your browser and you can see what it looks
right.
like, and I'm sure you can get some other information on
and
it.
And usually they're handled locally, too, so you can certainly purchase them locally during the season, too.
Okay, very good. We have a caller here with the question. Why don't we talk with them? And this is someone in Urbana, line number one.
Hi.
Hi.
There's a plant that I've admired for several years. I admire it in the fall and winter. I don't know what it is. The common name is Beautyberry.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a very intense small purple berry.
Yeah.
And they do seem to hold on, at least this one that I've seen. It's in the atrium garden. Well, it's not really an is an atrium closed on top? Anyhow, it's in an enclosed garden that is exposed at the top.
It'd be like a courtyard, probably.
That would be a better way to describe it. Yeah. Anyhow, so I would like to know what is the name of this plant and what does it need to live?
It's probably Calicarpa, and I think there's a couple of different species in there, and there actually is a native one, but the one we're talking about I think is actually Japanese or Asian originating. It actually is a beautiful plant, I think, in the sense that those berries, because they're that, it's an odd color. You don't think about it being a color you would see in nature for a berry.
It
looks almost like a lipstick color or something, this kind of violet kind of look to it. So it's very attractive. They're usually profusely on the plant, so that's great. They're really pretty tough plants overall, and you can put them probably more in a, they'll take some shade, but probably a little bit better in some sun. So kind of that partial shade to full sun area is probably a little bit better for them. Probably the only thing that I would have a little bit hesitation on is that pretty much all the ones that I've seen are pretty good size. As in, I don't know how big this one that you're seeing.
It's probably about 2 feet.
Oh, it's only 2 feet at this point?
Yeah, I think, yeah. But it doesn't have a lot of space around it.
Okay, so. Or maybe they're pruning it back. Because typically what I've seen is these get pretty big, as in, you know, 5x5, 6x6. And they tend to, I think that's the other thing that's really pretty bad, and they tend to arch, the branches sort of arch out, and so these, and with all these berries all along the stem. So they're really beautiful, so I could see why you like it. And it definitely, if I do a little bit of research, really look at the mature habit on the particular plant that you buy, but I wouldn't hesitate to buy it if you've got a space for it.
Oh, great. Oh,
sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's
so
very
much.
Pretty.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, wow. Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
I'm looking here at an article about them, and it says that there are a number of species of this, and there are some that are temperate, and they're deciduous. They lose their leaves. And there are some tropical ones that are evergreen. And I just wondered, do you have to really be careful about what you get and whether or not it's going to overwinter here? Or would even the tropical ones overwinter?
Yeah, no, probably not. I mean, I'm not aware of the tropical ones, so maybe they're not as available. I'm not sure, but it'd be one of those things you definitely want to check on it. But I would think most of them that you're going to find out in a shrub lot, or you're going to be pretty comfortable that they're going to winter over for you. I haven't seen that to be an issue, to be honest with you. So
and it does. I see what you're talking about with the purple color. It's
intense.
It is really intense, and it's not like a bluish purple. It's really purple.
Yeah.
It's almost an electric, it seems almost kind of an electric kind
You're right.
of purple.
That's a good way to describe it. Electric purple.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that looks pretty interesting. Okay. So that's beauty berry, or Calicarpa is what it's called. All right.
So if you're really looking for a different color.
Yeah. If that would be, you might have to harmonize that with the other stuff that you got there, or else it would be smacking you right in the face. It might be a little much. Well, you never can tell. Anyway, questions welcome here. Sandy Mason is with us. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County once a month on a Tuesday. She's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. So you have yard care kind of issues. Again, maybe you're still thinking about something from the last growing season, some kind of problem, or you're already thinking about next year and things that you would like to plant. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And you can also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. So we're truly, I suppose we're truly past the...
Frost date?
I was thinking about... About planting woody plants, like planting trees, or really woody perennials. So we're pretty much done with that until the spring.
Yeah, usually you're safe through Thanksgiving. Once we start getting into December, it starts to get iffier and iffier. So really, we're at the point I probably hold off if you certainly can. But you know, once we start getting into March, and there's really no big deal, so we don't have too many months off there where we're kind of sort of laying low and. not doing.
And if the weather was cooperative, maybe you were really itching to do something, and it did. We got a little break here when it got a little bit warmer. Is now once we've gone past the point where we have had frost and things really should be pretty much dormant. Is okay if you wanted to do a little bit of light pruning that you could do that.
Sure. I think at this point you certainly can if you can stand to be outside, be a little warm up, stand to be outside. Sure, I would absolutely go ahead and do that. And you know, when winter is a really good time to sort of really look at the plants and make some decisions on how much you're going to prune. But it is one of those things. If it's something you haven't pruned in a long time, you may, especially on a tree, you may decide that you really don't want to prune it all off at one time. It's best to probably do more a third this year, maybe, you know, just sort of, even if you have to put a little mark on it, okay, next year I'm going to take this one off and sort of plan, because sometimes, especially if you have something like an apple tree or any of those kind of plants, you know, they'll send up all this lush growth and all these what are called water sprouts and stuff, and you end up with actually even more of a maintenance headache by doing severe pruning on some of these woody type plants, trees in particular. Probably the other thing to also think about is that for some of the early bloomers or all the early bloomers is that, you know, if you're cutting them off, if you're doing pruning now, you're going to be pruning off the flower buds. Okay. So you have to keep that in mind. It's not that it's necessarily going to kill the plant, but you're going to be cutting off the flower bud. So that'd be things like lilacs and forsythia and anything that really blooms before mid-June, it probably already has its flower buds on right now. Yeah. So you have to kind of keep that in mind and sort of weigh, you know, how much is this plant really bugging me and I really want to prune it anyway and I'm willing to sacrifice some flowers or whether I want to wait till after it flowers.
Somehow I always manage to, this, as you say, that because now the plants, the foliage is gone, you can see the structure of the plant.
Sure.
And I look around and I see things and I see things that need to be sort of trimmed up and shaped up. And now it's really obvious because there's just the bare branches. Somehow I never get around to... Actually, you know, in the spring, suddenly everything goes...
I know.
And I need to make a note to self that sometime, like maybe March... then before things really leaf out,
right.
But when it gets a little bit more like, you know, you can be outside and doing stuff, that's the time to start thinking about that, where you can still see things and then you can actually get at them and make some decisions about shape and stuff.
And we usually have at least a little bit of a warm-up sometime or other, you know, where you feel like, hopefully, she says, where we hopefully can actually get out and do things. And so, and certainly as we get into even February and stuff, we get a little warm-up, I definitely, you know, start doing a little pruning now.
Yeah, that would be nice. I don't know. This morning on the market report, there was somebody on who was talking about this idea that it could be like this for the next several weeks.
Well, that's...
So, invest in long underwear.
I don't know whether
get
I want to
your
think
scarves
about that right now.
And, and think about all the good stuff you're going to do inside. Let's go to the phones here. McLean County, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a I've been waiting to talk to you. Anyway, I have an indoor plant that came in a basket, you know, funeral basket. And it's getting these, let me kind of describe what it looks like because I have no idea what it's called. It kind of has, it's tall, it has leaves coming out, kind of like banana leaves crossed or not as wide, but then bamboo leaves. So it's kind of in between, it's kind of dark in color. It's getting these yellow, little spots, yellow spots, and they get brown in the center as they get bigger and they turn brown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was getting tall enough to reach the ceiling. We're trying to decide what to do with it, and now the top half is really in bad shape. Any idea what I could do?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is. I have a feeling it's probably some kind of Dracaena.
Okay.
It's called. And so you might just look on the web and maybe look at some pictures under Dracaena. There's a whole bunch of Dracaenas out there, unfortunately. But I have a feeling it's probably one of those very popular houseplants and put in a lot of things. So it sounds like from your description, it sounds actually like a leaf disease issue.
Uh-huh.
Where we actually have a brown spot and almost a halo kind of effect. That often is an indication of leaf disease problems.
And what do we do with it?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it all over the plant? Is it something that you could actually remove the diseased ones and go from there? Or
the top half of it. I mean, this is, let's see, I'm 5 foot. This is about 6.5 feet high now. The top half is pretty much, yes. The bottom half doesn't look like it. But I'm afraid it might move down.
Right.
You're right. If I don't do something, it might.
Right. So it has a single stalk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a second one, but very, very low. And in even the top ones of the top of that one actually starting to get the yellow spots in it, too.
Yeah. That sounds like what it is. And unfortunately, you know, certainly fungicides might be an option for you, but it gets hard to do it indoors, spraying really large plants, because where do you do it and all that kind of stuff. So spraying is really hard to do on those. So usually sanitation, if we can get rid of those leaves, often that will help.
Okay.
I assume it's in some kind of full sun, plenty of air circulation, those kind of things.
It's by a window and it's by a vent. Sorry.
Yeah, but, so it's getting...
It's by our largest window, a south window, so it does get sun in the winter.
Right.
And then there is, of course, the air vent close by.
Right.
So it's basically sanitation and then fungicide.
Yeah, that might be an option for you. It doesn't sound like any of the insect problems, you know, that we typically would see, but I would still look really close at the leaves and make sure you're not seeing, you know, because this would be the time of year spider mites and all kinds of things would show up. But from your description, these round spots and stuff, it doesn't really sound like that, but that'd be worth looking into.
Because it's starts off with little yellow dots, and they get bigger and bigger, then the center turns brown, and the yellow halo remains.
Yeah, sounds like a leaf disease issue. Really does. And I don't know, you know, with a lot of these central stalk ones, if you cut them off, what I was wondering is, I don't know if you want it to stay that tall. Uh-huh. They do get kind of a funky dog leg. So you may not like the way it looks if you cut off the top. But that was one thing. I didn't know if the new leaves, as they come out, they're still getting this. You may have to think about.
Yeah, they are. The new leaves are getting
even the new leaf. Yeah. So that's going to be hard. So you might try some sanitation, just actually removing those leaves.
Uh-huh.
It's going to look funky for a while, obviously. So, but it is one of those things that you might be able to slow it down that way and then kind of go from there and see how it looks. But I have a feeling, you know, that's what you're looking at is a leaf disease.
Can I ask you a couple of other really quick questions?
Sure.
Is it too late to prune roses, and how high should you prune them?
Typically, we'd probably wait until the 1st of April to prune them, unless you really find that they're so tall that they're sort of whipping in the wind, and then I might, you know, prune them down a little bit. But I'd really wait on any heavy pruning until the 1st of April.
All right. And how could I find the generic name for what they call holy basil? Is something people from India use a lot?
Holy
and in the news
basil.
A lot, you know, or the different programs. Basil?
Yeah. I don't know whether that's a particular cultivar I'm sorry, I don't know too much about that. Maybe David can do a quick search here. We can figure out what it is. But you may have to be one of those things where you have to look online or do a search or something, because I'm not sure holy basil if that. There's lots of different basil species, so it could be just actually even a different species of basil.
Can I go back to something we were talking about earlier, and this will be my last question? I'm going to have to move part of my garlic, because I planted garlic and figured out that I'm going to have to move my fence due to some reason anyway. Can I move it? Should I move it now, or should I wait till later, or should I just, whenever I have to, like in March and April, just dig it up and try to save it to replant it later?
I would probably move it in March or April. You know, at this point, I think I'd wait until it just warms up a little bit and you can able and actually dig as many roots out as you can and move it at that point.
And it will survive.
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay. Great. Great. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That was my biggest problem with moving the fence, was my garlic, because I spent hours planting it. So, thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. We are just about at our midpoint here of this part of Focus. We have some other callers. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us on the second Tuesday of every month. Now, I do want to mention here that in January, we have a small change in the schedule. She will be here on the third Tuesday, so that will be January 18th, January only, and February we'll go back to the other schedule. So it will be a Tuesday.
It will be Tuesday.
It will be Tuesday.
The third Tuesday on the 18th.
333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. And we actually had a call from somebody, and I also went on here looking for the holy basil, and it apparently is something that is native to India, and it's called Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, and I guess it actually is a true basil. When you see the picture, it looks like basil, and it's something that apparently some people feel that it has certain kinds of beneficial medicinal kind of qualities. But whether that's something that you could, I suppose, if you could get the seeds, you could grow it from seed. If it's a basil, I guess, you know, it would be like other basils that have to be, you'd have to keep it warm. It would have to have good sun. You could probably grow it in pots or
right,
in your garden
right.
in the
summertime.
Summertime.
Sure.
All right.
Sure. Oh, all that's right. Fine. So Tulsi's the common name?
Yes, because okay. I also did find what the Latin name for it was, and I'll have to go back and see if I can find it.
See how you pronounce that one. All
right. You don't love me anymore, do you? Let's see now. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Will-talk is the email, and we will go next to line number three, and that is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I had some variegated sweet potato vines in a container over the summer. After it had frosted a couple times, I brought it in. Two of the vines seem to have died back. One of them is still growing leaves. How do I winter these over?
Well, they're true sweet potatoes, so you can actually just grow it on. You can grow it on just as a houseplant.
Mm-hmm.
They actually do fairly well in that. Or you actually can, if you have halfway decent conditions, it'll form a tuber. I don't know if you've pulled it up or anything
not
like that.
Yet.
It's actually a tuberous root, but you can actually go ahead and store that. Sometimes those are tough to winter over because they tend to dry out too much,
mm-hmm.
like trying to hang on to sweet potatoes for a long period of time. So I think you're better off just going ahead, if you've got a little space there, just to grow it on as a houseplant. It'll look, won't grow real well, and it'll kind of sit there if it doesn't have a whole lot of light. But usually by the time we get back to into the gardening season, it'll come right out of it.
It looks kind of straggly now. Should I trim it back in the spring?
Yes, I would.
Okay, thanks so much.
Sure.
All right, thank you. All right, here you go. Holy basil is Oxymum sanctum. It is in the mint family, so I guess it must be a basil. Tulsi is the Hindi name for it.
Okay.
And it's something that has apparently a long tradition of use in Indian traditional medicine. And it says here, there in India, Hindus, they grow it as a religious plant in their homes and their temples, and they also use the leaves in worship. And apparently it has a number of people believe that it has a number of beneficial qualities. It can be used as tea, I guess, and I'm not sure if it's commonly used in culinary uses. But that's what, and I'm sure that if they have web access, just go to your favorite browser and put in holy basil, and I'm sure that you will find a number of references to it.
Right. It does, as you said, basil actually comes up very easily from seed, or you can start it indoors very easily from seed. So that's the good part, too.
All
well,
right.
Interesting.
Very
Thank
good.
You.
Let us next go to, let's see, we'll go to, how about Oak Forest, I think. No, Terre Haute. We'll do that first. Terre Haute, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about a ficus tree that I have that spends the summers outside and loves it. And when it comes inside in the wintertime, is happy for a while and then develops a sticky substance on the leaves, which also drops off the leaves and is kind of a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what that might be and if there's anything that I can do about it.
Well, it's very common, the ficus on the weeping figs and stuff, to get, it sounds like scale. Which is an insect, and it's really, it's one of those things that it's the stickiness that you notice, because the insect itself is really kind of hard to see unless you really look closely, but they look like tiny little helmets, kind of these brown things, but there's no discernible head or tail or legs or anything that would tell you it's alive, but they're on the stems, the young ones can actually be on the undersides of the leaves, but they give off this honeydew stuff, this sticky stuff, so I would imagine that's what it is. Mealybug's another one that we might see some stickiness with, but typically, you'd probably see the mealybug. It's that white, cottony-looking stuff, and they're much more obvious than scale.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling it's scale. Scale's a little hard to get rid of, but with some persistence, you can take care of it. Using insecticidal soap is actually a really good product for scale. And you're going to have to, I don't know how big this is, but somehow, obviously protect the surroundings. But insecticidal soap is one of those safer type products that we can use. And it's really good for soft-bodied insects and for things like scale. You read the label. It'll probably tell you, to reapply in 7 to 10 days. And I would definitely do that. One spray is not going to do it. That's the hard part.
Okay, it never has this problem in the summer when it's outside.
Well, interesting. When you say that, that's exactly right. Because it has the problem, but there's lots of beneficial insects that are actually out there eating the scale, the young scale.
Right.
So they keep the populations low, but they don't keep the populations out completely. So they don't eat everything. So when we bring it indoors, of course, no predators, then the scale takes off again.
Okay, well, so. It takes it a while before.
Yeah, sure.
I notice it, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to keep the leaves sprayed, you know, so that it would have a lot of humidity. Uh-huh. It could be sprayed with water, hoping that would help, but probably not, huh?
No, you really need the insecticidal soap, something that's actually going to go ahead and kill the insect, because okay. they really can reach high populations, and it gets really hard to sort of deal with them. So maybe in the future what you might want to do is, you know, as you're getting ready to bring it indoors, really give it a good spray of insecticidal soap, you know, and really try to clean it off as best you can that way, because probably it's hanging on, but just in really low populations until you get it indoors, and then it finally gets a chance to take off.
Is it going to kill the tree if I don't take care of it?
It could. And okay. plus, it's just so messy. I mean, that's sticky stuff all over. It will drip all over the place, and it's just really messy. So high populations could kill twigs.
Okay. Sure. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Very good. Thank you. And let's go next to line number 2, and this would be Oak Forest. Hello.
Hi. Over the last couple of years, I've had trouble with rust on daylilies and iris,
mm-hmm.
and I've been spraying for it and keeping it pretty well under control, but this summer it attacked all my tomato plants, and I didn't want to spray those. I've never heard of practically all the leaves fell off the tomato plant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I doubt if it's the same thing. It's probably a fungal issue, but I doubt sincerely that it's the same disease that's going to daylilies. Usually most of these things are pretty specific to their particular plant. Probably, unfortunately, tomatoes get lots of leaf disease issues. And it's one of those things you kind of have to, did the leaves kind of turn, they had spots on them, and then they turned yellow, and then they
yep.
sort of turned brown, and then hung on forever kind of thing?
And then eventually fell off. There were no leaves, basically.
Yeah, they get a couple of different diseases, septoria. There's a couple of diseases in there. And the good news, bad news is that it can be taken care of. Probably one of the best things that I've ever done is really give them good air circulation.
They did have it.
Okay, so there's no other plants around them, no other tomato plants around them? In other words, there's nothing.
There's 4 tomato plants. They were Jet Star, a grape, and a room.
Right. But there's like a footer.
They have lots of space between them.
Okay. So that's good. So that's number one. We always find this is worse when we have really high humidity and those kind of. So sometimes just the environmental conditions make it worse. One of the things you can do is, as it starts to happen, is to remove those leaves. Kind of we're back to that whole sanitation thing, because it's a fungal disease, and the fungus will stay on those leaves and then get bigger and bigger and throughout the whole plant. So sometimes sanitation's good. You may decide that you need to go to a fungicide to help. If it really seems like that you can't get it under control in other ways. During the end of the season, just getting rid of, making sure that you get rid of all those leaves, because that fungus will overwinter on all the dead stuff.
Is it, first of all, what fungal spray would I use that's safe on something you're going to eat? And then would spraying all the soil help too?
Spraying the soil doesn't...
Early in the season?
Spraying the soil, it's really not coming from the soil. It's coming from, you know, it's coming through the air is really what it is. So it's really hard to do. It's not a soil-borne pathogen unless you happen to have lots of those dead leaves down there. And that's why I said just making sure you rake and get rid of all those dead leaves usually takes care of that. So spraying the soil is not a soil issue. But good sanitation, really important. You may decide, as far as a fungicide, there are a couple of different fungicides that are out there that are labeled certainly for vegetables. And you just have to make sure it's labeled for vegetables and tomatoes, and that's fine. But catching it early is the big thing. That, you know, if half the plant or even a third of the plant already has the disease, you're really at the point where you're going to have a hard time controlling it. So you need to catch it early.
I started out trying to pull the leaves off.
It's really hard. Yeah,
it was came after a whole month of terrible rain.
Yeah, see, that's it's perfect.
And it was a hopeless. It was just hopeless.
Right, and it is one of those things. I actually have found if you get that time period in there when we seem to have lots of rains there, if you can get a time period there where you can go and spray even in between the rains, even as long as the spray has a chance to dry, sometimes that can help, because it only takes like 6 to 8 hours for some of these fungus to actually go ahead and infect. They don't need a long time period. A little moisture on the leaves for 6 to 8 hours, the fungus is there, bang, you got it. So it's really important to get in there and take care of it.
the rust on the daylily and iris. Should I start spraying real early for that?
That's another issue. Yeah, you're back to the whole sanitation, catching it early, those kind of things. And just really making sure, and you probably do this already, is to make sure you get all those leaves out of there.
Yeah. And I was wondering if before I even see any spots, should I start spraying?
I would. Because you've had this regular problem with it,
yeah.
I would.
Okay. Thanks. And yeah. What was the name of that Arkansas plant that you talked about that turned real yellow in the fall?
It's Blue Star, Arkansas Blue Star.
Okay. I didn't mm-hmm. only caught the
Arkansas. Yeah, it's real. Yeah, very pretty. Or Amsonia, it's also called.
Okay. Thank you very mm-hmm. much.
Very good. Thank you. And next we will talk with somebody in Decatur. Line one. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
There's a small tree I like real a lot. It's called a Wahoo. And it's hard to find, and very few nurseries carry it. You can catch some of it. There's a few wild plants that I know I've collected seed from. I'm trying to grow it from seed. I haven't been able to buy some seed or some plants, some small startings. But my couple of questions. Number one, why doesn't it have more popularity? Because it's got a beautiful little pinkish red berry in the fall, and the birds love it.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I've tried to grow it from seed, but I haven't had any luck. So any suggestions?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's one of those things that people are familiar with the burning bush, which is its non-native relative. And I think it's one of those things where the burning bush has that intense red fall color. It's fairly easy to propagate, and it just kind of took off. Whereas the eastern wahoo, just even though it's native and has a lot of the great characteristics, as you said, it just never, the burning bush kind of took over at that point. So it's unfortunate, and it's one of those things. But it's great that you're considering it, and maybe more people will think about getting it, and then it'll be more available. I've probably seen, I don't know about, I'd really have to do some background check on as far as starting it from seed. I would say cuttings or divisions and stuff would be fairly easy with that plant. So you might actually start, use cuttings on it, like a semi-hardwood when it's just starting to get, a little bit of that new growth and starting to harden off. That would be another technique that I would think.
I did try cuttings, and it wasn't
didn't go for it
there either. So tell me, how would you do a cutting? So you take off a brand new, maybe a sucker growth or a new stem off the plant, and just stick in the ground, or how would you do it?
I would probably do it in pots. I'd probably get something called root tone, and you can get that at most garden center type places. Is root tone? It's a rooting powder, rooting hormone.
Yeah,
it'll
I've
be
got
called
the rooting powder too.
And I'd probably go ahead and do that, but I would start it in pots.
Okay.
So you can control, how much sun it's getting and all those kinds of things, and actually making sure that it's plenty moist. I might even go ahead and put something over the top of it, whether it's a pop bottle, the top of a pop bottle or whatever, just sort of make a little mini greenhouse. It's one of those things that's worth investigating, and I just don't know right off the top of my head, but I certainly know that the burning bush is easy to propagate, so it'd be one of those things that I would imagine the native one probably is too. We just need to figure it out.
How long of a cutting would you get?
Think about 6 to 8 inches.
Okay.
And usually we look at what are called semi-hardwood. So it's new growth, but it's starting to hard off.
Right.
And usually those are pretty good at rooting. So it may be just the timing of when you take the cuttings, because maybe semi-hardwood actually isn't the best time for that particular one.
Okay.
So it'd be worth either going to the library or doing a search and see if we can find out for sure. Or you can give me a call and I can see about figuring that out for you.
Okay. Thanks.
Uh-huh,
all right,
sure.
Thank you for the call. We'll go back again to another caller, and this will be somebody in Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, hi, that's me.
Yes.
I am not much of a gardener, but I am also a new homeowner. And as part of that, I have been feeling the urge to plant things that last, like fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about blueberry and apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you could give me any advice about planting them, or if there are trees that are easier for someone who's really not very skilled or doesn't spend a lot of time out in the garden, in terms of some fruit-bearing trees that, mm-hmm. that can help me feel rooted to my new home.
So to speak. apple probably wouldn't be my first choice.
Okay.
Because they take pruning. They take pruning every year. There are a lot of insect and disease pressures, so it's difficult to have a really, you know, you're not going to get the grocery store quality type of apple without some effort. So it wouldn't be high on my list. Blueberries actually grow very well here if you spend the time to develop the area where they're going to be, because they need an acidic soil. So if you have that area, and actually they will take some shade, which is kind of nice. They actually like afternoon shade. So sometimes you can actually put them in a spot that really does pretty well, even though it's getting some shady. They are one of those that need that acidic soil. So, you know, this ideally the fall before you plant them, that next spring, you'd actually go ahead and put in all kinds of compost, sulfur, typically we would add to lower the pH, and you'd sort of get that area ready for them. So it's a lot like
all ahead of time.
That would be, or the year ahead of time, something. So, because it's not an immediate reaction that suddenly the soil turns acidic. It just doesn't happen that fast.
Okay.
So you need to get it ready. They're beautiful plants. Blueberries have beautiful fall color. You know, of course, the white flowers, you have the berries. So there's lots of things going on. So I actually think blueberries make a very nice landscape plant, as well as just, you know, you get a little fruit off of them as well. So apples probably wouldn't be the one. I would probably, if you really want a tree type fruit, I'd probably be more inclined to go with something like I don't know if you like sour cherries, but there's some fairly nice sour cherries that are smaller trees. They generally give you a pretty good a fruit every year, other than the birds like the fruit as well, so you have to fight the birds for them. But generally, you know, you can only have, there's a lot of them that are self-pollinating, so you don't have to worry about getting two, because that's the other problem with apples, that generally need more than one. So there's some real issues. I'd probably go with sour cherries, or peaches might be another one, because you could certainly get a self-pollinating peach. So there might be some other ones I'd think of. Pardon?
Peaches would grow well around here?
You know, if you get some of the tough ones, like Reliance is a good one. Now, every third or fourth year, you'll find we have a really late frost and you won't get a big crop. But it's one of those things that I think, as far as just a landscape type tree, I think they're a little bit better. You don't have to do quite as much pruning, and the insect and pressures aren't quite as big as we see on apples. So I'd think about some other ones before I'd probably look at apples.
Okay. And I have another question, actually. The previous homeowners have a wonderful compost pile that I've been using until about a week ago, when the snow made it a little harder to get out there. Is that something that I can continue to add to over the winter? Or is that something that I should just leave alone over the winter?
You certainly can add to it over the winter. I'm not sure what kinds of things you're thinking about adding. You mean as you trim stuff, or as you...
Household food waste.
Yeah, you can. Certainly can do food waste. Probably the biggest thing is that you really do need to put something on top of the food waste. So whether you have potting soil or you have something out there that you can put on top, so it's not just sitting there, because then you kind of invite critters to come in too. So if you can, you know, put some, or if you have shredded leaves or something to put on top of it, then that works out fine. Because I do that all winter long. I go ahead and put stuff out there. Sure.
And in terms of the peach tree, sorry to go back to that, is there anything that I need to do to prepare the soil ahead of time for peach trees?
Not so much for them. They like our soils for the most part. They don't like soils that are really wet. They like full sun, you know, good air circulation, those kind of things. So it's really probably more of a siting thing than having to worry too much about the soil generally.
All right, thank you very much.
Good
All right,
luck.
Thank you for the call. We'll be here for about another 5 minutes with Sandy Mason. We want to bring you a little news here, a breaking news story. It's just been reported that the mayor of Springfield, Tim Davlin, has died. There apparently was a report of a shooting this morning at his home. He was found dead. There's not a lot of detail, more additional detail available at this point. I'm sure that story will develop as we have more. We'll bring it to you, and certainly we'll have more when we do our first update of regional news. That will be at 12:04 today. And we do have maybe about another 5 minutes here. If somebody wants to give us a call and talk with Sandy, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me ask you about Christmas trees just real quick, just because they're, you know, some people like to decorate with them and like to bring the trees in at this time of year. And there are all kinds of stories and ideas and things that people do with the idea that it helps the tree stay fresh longer. Is there any of that that actually seems to, you know, other than just making sure that you do a fresh cut and you make sure that there's water, you have it in a container where it has water, anything that you put in that water that actually does anything?
They really haven't found anything that really helps the longevity of the Christmas tree, you know, by adding stuff to it. They're not like cut flowers. You know, there's just not the same thing. Certainly with cut flowers, you can add stuff to the water and it helps the flowers to last longer. And trees just aren't the same thing. And you really, you've hit on the big thing, is just to make sure you do a fresh cut, put it in the, you know, right before you put it in the water, because you don't want that to sap over, and then keep it wet. If it dries out, you know, you don't leave enough water in there and it dries out, you may need to cut it again, which I know is
which
like
may
ridiculous.
Be a little problem,
right?
If you have it
so
decorated.
That's a really good incentive to never let it dry out. Yeah. And I think the other thing is just really spending a little money and get a good tree stand, one that holds a lot of water, not those old-fashioned ones that I had when I was a kid where I had like two teaspoons of water in it. Really get some of the nice ones now that really hold a couple of quarts of water, and it really helps immensely to get a good tree stand, spend the money on it, and it'll really help you immensely.
And I suppose it also can make a big difference if you can get one that was grown not very far away from here, so that the time between the time when it's cut and you get it is as short as it can be.
Right. So going to cut your own type of places is really a great idea. And then you know it's fresh. And also just looking at the species. Some of them just keep their needles better. The Fraser firs and some of those actually keep their needles better. Some of the spruces don't keep their needles as well. Pines tend to keep their needles. So sometimes just needle retention just on the species can make a big difference.
Okay. Well, now we have a number of callers. We'll try to get as many as we can. First is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. For the last caller, I've planted a yellow sweet cherry.
Oh.
My neighbor's red cherry pollinates it very nicely. The birds eat the red cherries and they leave the yellow cherries alone.
Because they just don't know. So
yeah.
That's good. That's a good idea.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks for the
Thank
suggestion.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. To Terre Haute. Line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about a bamboo houseplant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've had it about 2 years. It was a gift, and it's very beautiful. It's dark green, probably now grown to about a foot tall. Its early leaves are very, very green, but the newer ones are almost a pale yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And the only instruction that I got was to keep it watered. It's in about a 5x5 square bowl filled with little rocks,
mm-hmm.
and you fill it up until you see the water.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch that every couple days. But does it need anything else besides the water?
Well, I think it's one of those things that they're nice in the beginning, those lucky bamboos or whatever, different names, but where they grow them on water. But eventually, they really need some fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
But it's tough to do that in a bowl and not have algae grow and have it not look all that great, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think you'd be better off to go ahead and plant it into soil. Then you can fertilize it properly. I have a feeling those new leaves, they just aren't getting enough nitrogen.
Okay, so the bamboo can grow in the soil.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. So that would be a better long-term solution, I would think.
How big a pot, say, would it's about a foot tall,
mm-hmm.
and it's got a lot of roots, and it's based around, I would say, about 10 stalks of bamboo, and then mm-hmm. the leaves grow out from there.
Mm-hmm. They actually can be pretty tight in a pot. They don't necessarily need lots of room. They'll kind of fill the pot, whatever you use. I would think like an 8-inch pot, something like that. Just bump it up where there's a couple of inches all around, you know, of extra space, and that'll be just fine.
And just regular houseplant fertilizer?
Sure. I would go with that. If you don't have a whole lot of light, you know, if it's not in a bright light, I wouldn't fertilize it a bunch until we start getting some you know, more daylight length to it, would be my suggestion too. But I think it definitely needs some fertilizer.
Okay, thank you. I want to keep it going.
Sure, sounds great.
Okay, all right, thank you. We'll try to go at least one more. That's Leroy, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah.
We have a very darkly shaded backyard, lots of mature trees. And what we'd like to do is plant understory plants that are native to Illinois. Is there a single source listing for anything like that, or some web address or other that we could find information related to that? And I'll get off the line and listen.
Okay. There actually, if you go to the ACES Publications website, you can actually get a book, and I think it's also probably available in the bookstores, called Landscaping with Native Plants in the Midwest, I think is the name. But if you go to ACES Publications and just put in native plants or native landscaping, it should pop up. And it was, you know, written for this area. And I think the nice thing about it is it does give you sort of these plans. And some of them aren't necessarily going to be for these really shady environments. But it gives you a lot of information on different types of plants and, you know, how they'll do well in a landscape. So I think that's probably, I think it's a really good book for that. So hopefully it's Landscaping with Native Plants. Does that sound right? In the Midwest?
I'm working at that.
But that would be, I think it's a really good book. And it is through the University of Illinois. So I think between all that, hopefully within all that information, you'll find the correct title.
Well, so, this is not very helpful, but I'm sure that if people go to the ACES website, that's because it's given me Alabama Cooperative Extension System.
I don't.
There must be some other ACEs in the world.
There is an ACEs, other ACEs,
other
Alabama.
ACEs
that's happened to me
there.
Too.
Okay. Well, anyway, in any case, I'm sure that if people get the right, get the U of I ACEs website and look for landscaping. What's it?
I think it's Landscaping with Native plants
in the Midwest.
I think that's the name, and I'm sorry I don't have the exact title.
And there are a lot of, through ACEs, there are a lot of really great publications that are really very specific for our region. So if you're, whatever it is you're trying to grow, making sure that you get the right variety and sort of understand the needs of plants that grow right here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, those are great ones.
And my apologies for this one last person that we're not going to be able to take. Sandy will be back next month in January. And if you're marking your calendar here, she will be here in January on the third Tuesday, the 18th. We usually do the second. So she'll be here January 18th. Then February will be back on the regular schedule. And, of course, in the meantime, if you're a gardener and you need some gardening advice, we have a program. It's called Illinois Gardener on WYLL-TV. It's on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. It's a live show. Sandy occasionally is on the show. Other people from around the area that work in garden centers and are involved with the university are there. It's a live show, so there's always this opportunity to call in and ask questions. So if you're a gardener, if you haven't seen Illinois Gardener, Diane Nolan is the host. It's a nice show. You might want to tune in for that. So it's Thursdays, WYLL-TV. 7 o'clock.
And they're now archived. So if you go to the website, you can actually see past programs. And we have a blog. So you can ask us questions as well.
Excellent.
Read our blog.
Sandy Mations, she is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Thanks very much.
Thank you.